Welcome to Off Court, the Business of Sport podcast, where business and sports culture meet. Let's go. Kick it off, Robbie.
Mitch, how are you, mate?
Going well, thanks, Robbie. Thanks for having me on.
It's a real pleasure to have you on, actually. You're pretty much an A-grade celebrity as far as I'm concerned. What's happening in your world at the moment?
Just gearing up for trade period, to be honest, mate. It's probably our busiest time of the year. It probably garners the most interest, even more than finals, I reckon, because you've got all 18 teams and fans trying to clamour to any news they can get and build some hope into 2022. So, yes, the finals are big, but I reckon the trade period sort of takes it to a new level and fans can saddle up and sort of build a bit of hype into next season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, we're dropping this after the finals, but I am a Bulldog supporter and we're still in it. We've still got a shot. So, interesting to look back at this podcast once it's all done and see how we go. But you're a Cats man as well.
I am. Born and bred in Geelong. So, a bit hard not to get behind the Cats as a kid. But, the passion sort of worn off a bit, unfortunately, just working in footy and dealing with these guys day in, day out. You go to the press conferences and deal with the players and the administration staff and those sorts of things. And you just, unfortunately, that gilt-edged passion that you had growing up and living and dying by the results just isn't there. But I guess footy is a business at the end of the day, and that's the path I've taken.
Yeah, for sure. And I've actually spoken on this podcast before, but for me it was like when my peers, people that I played with, people that I know, started getting drafted and started playing AFL, it kind of, I don't know, it didn't have the same like appeal to me, just from a like, these are not your heroes anymore. These are guys that you went to school with. These are guys that you played footy with. You know them too well to be putting them up on that huge pedestal. So I think then it becomes a bit more like, just a piece of entertainment for me personally. I don't know. Is that because you obviously work so in depth in the game? Do you reckon that's kind of hindered your pure passion for it?
Yeah, probably. And it's a good point. I was the same, maybe 18, 19, when you got guys you went to school with or played footy with yourself, seeing them do it. That bit of that fantasy, I guess, in terms of not knowing the full gravitas of what is involved in footy and seeing that they're just everyday blokes is a bit of that, I'm sure. I still remember the first year I got a job when I was 20 working for Croc Media under Craig Hutchison and Damien Barrett. I met Gary Ablett. Because his manager, Liam Pickering, shared an office with our business. And I still remember shaking his hand that day in the office and thinking that was a pretty cool moment. But from that point on, I reckon any footballer, how big their name is regardless, I reckon it's sort of rubbed off, that sort of that high-end excitement has rubbed off a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. And you kind of have to normalize that, right? Like you know, you can't be starstruck every time you go and interview someone or talk to someone.
No, exactly. And they're just everyday blokes, like I said, and they just want to. And I think that's the best way to get something out of people is to just be at their level, try and just have a general chit chat and these sorts of things. Because at the end of the day, it's a job for them. Yes, they love playing footy on the weekend and they might commit to it a bit more than everyone else's job, but they're just there doing their thing as well. And you just got to treat them like that, I'm pretty sure.
For sure. And I mean, not to the same extent as you, obviously, but, you know, through some of my work with Uncle Jack specifically, we collaborated with a lot of athletes. And probably one of the bigger ones was Paddy Mills, which actually happened a bit earlier on in the piece. And, as a huge sports fan in general, I was pretty starstruck when we went and did, some of the content and photo shoot. And that sort of thing. And you really just can't be, giddy and, just caught up in who this person is because, as you said, at the end of the day, they're just normal people. Like they're just human beings, But, yeah, I think it's one of those things where you just got to kind of get it out of your system and, going forward. Even with this podcast, like, there's some guests coming on here with it, that are recognized nationally, some internationally, And it's just like, you know, at the end of the day, they're here for a chat. You know, they're normal people going about their day with, you know, some of them have potentially more interesting stories than the normal everyday person. But, yeah, they're just humans.
Have you found it's been easier to get people than you first imagined? That's something maybe that's taken me a bit by surprise. Like some people, trust me, they're impossible to track down and don't want to chat. But sometimes you think once you get into it and you've got a bit of work behind you, it's actually a little bit easier than what you may have first thought before you step foot into it.
Yeah, potentially. I think momentum's key as well. Like I think if people can see that, you know, maybe someone like yourself can see that other people that are somewhat credible have been on or have, you know, worked with a brand or something, you might go, oh, well, you know, these guys are somewhat serious. You know, they're not just out here to get a headline or whatever it might be. So yeah, I think there's an element of momentum. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I reckon. Then trust me, I did when we got in touch. I checked out some of the other guests, and I like to do as much as I can and jump on as many podcasts and chat to as many people as possible. But it's always good to have a good profile and image, I reckon. And there's so many different offerings out there, but I reckon if you can put yourself above and beyond, it's a big result. And yeah, if you're tracking down international stars and those sorts of things, that they're hard to get hold of. But yeah, I don't know. Just in my line of work, you know, sometimes you call someone and you get off the phone call and think that was a bit easier than maybe I thought. And you gear yourself up to thinking it's a lot bigger and harder than what it should be. And you're probably always fearing for the worst, especially when you're younger and you're first stepping into it. But, yeah, like you said, I think a bit of momentum and just knowing you can do it goes a long way.
Yeah, definitely. Kind of build it up in your head a little bit. Who would be the sort of the biggest sort of profile that you've kind of had to deal with, I suppose, or interviewed or had to call or something like that? Give us a big name is what I'm asking.
Well, I went to Shane Warne's house early 20s. I was producing a show called Great Australian Lives at the time, hosted by Joe Hall, who was ex-Channel 9 newsreader in Melbourne, still does some great work on Channel 9, and shared a personal relationship with Warney from years ago, probably when Warney was not the name that he is now. But even just stepping foot in his house and grabbing a drink and those sorts of things, just for a chat, it was a podcast much like this. I think it was 45 minutes, and he couldn't have been better with his time. Dealing with his PA and then Warney himself was pretty surreal at that point. Probably the international stars, and that's why I guess I work full-time in footy, and, you know, the coaches and players now, I guess I sort of don't see it as big as that on the international level, but someone like Shane Warne, you know, Nick Kyrgios, dealing with him in the past, I think when he won Wimbledon and got a couple of run-ons when he not won the tournament but won a couple of games early on in his tenure, and all he wanted to chat about was NBA. So you get a good sense of appreciation of these blokes and what they're about.
Definitely. So, mate, give us a bit of an insight into your sort of day, because you've got a lot going on, and I can imagine you're like constantly got info coming in on the phones, getting DMs, you know, different sources. What's a, you know, an average day, if you could possibly come up with an average day?
Yeah, it's a good point. And you talk about the DMs and the social media, you probably get more tip-offs and little bits of information through social media now than maybe 5 years ago when I was sort of first delving into it. So a normal day would be, probably starts the night before, to be honest. Before I go to bed, I'll make sure I read all the newspapers and check out Twitter and these sorts of things to make sure I know what's going on. And when I wake up in the morning, check emails, maybe text a few people. And then it's, to be honest, it's just hitting the phones for much of the day. And even before I jumped on here, I just had a quick call back from someone I had called earlier in the day. And you only probably get a chance, maybe one or two chances to call them back, because if you miss that opportunity throughout the day, then they're gone. So you're calling them to ask for a favor or to get a bit of information out of them. They don't have all day to be sitting around waiting for you to call them back. So stacks of phone calls, texts are probably more prominent now than they were a number of years ago. Easier to get people on text. They might be in meetings on Zoom chats that they're happy to reply via text. And then, yeah, Instagram, Twitter, DMs. I'm not as massive on it. I probably still prefer to speak to people on the phone or text them where I can. But I definitely do play their part in some respects. And, yeah, just trying to keep across the news and constantly thinking where I can take a story. So we're speaking at the time now as the Lachie Neale scenario has sort of come and gone with his request and the talk about his request to move back to Fremantle. It's, all right, that story's happened. Where can I take it and where are the angles and where are the little holes that might need to be filled in and where can I take this story? Because I think the news cycle moves so quick that once the story's out there, there's so many people you're competing with to take the story forward and add in and colour in the dots. So that's where my mind is constantly going. Any journalist will probably tell you the same thing. You don't sign up for a 38-hour news week. You're constantly checking the news and, yeah, just trying to keep across the news cycle throughout the day.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask, how do you go from getting, say, a tip-off or some kind of information to what's the process of that actually becoming a story? Like, I imagine you've got to, you know, go through some hurdles or some loops to make sure it's all, you know, A-OK and accurate.
Yeah, for sure. So, say a tip-off comes in from someone, and the whole thing goes back to trust. You're dealing with and speaking to people who hopefully you've got a long history with or you've dealt with in the past. So they know what you're about. They know that they can chat to you and trust you with information. And then you're just trying to go to the clubs or agents or the players themselves to try and verify that information. Not always it can be verified. People have different agendas. They're trying to hide information. They're trying to work on different things behind the scenes and all that comes into it. But I think you just got to be upfront and honest with people and try not to dance around the edges because at the end of the day, it's either a yes, no answer. And if someone's willing to lie to you, then you know next time you speak to that person that you may not need to. You may be able to go around them and if you can't trust them in the first instance or they don't get back to you, then maybe it opens up for down the track you to go down a different avenue and bypass that person.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying this podcast, I would love if you could screenshot it, chuck it up on your Instagram story and tag us at offcourt.sport. All right, let's get back to it. So do you develop like a bit of a, I suppose it could be an organic thing, but a bit of like an inner circle where something comes in and you've got sort of a little group that you'll go to sort of clarify these things, or does it go out a bit more broadly than that?
Probably yes and no. There'll be people, you know, a lot of stories where maybe only four or five people know them. So you've got to try and have contacts at different clubs and all parts of the country. You know, we're talking right now in the midst of the trade period and list managers, club CEOs, footy managers at different clubs, coaches, players themselves, their player agents. If there's a trade going down or if something's about to happen, multiple people will know. Just about trying to get as close to the source as you can. And when I talk about that trust is you might have had countless conversations with the same people throughout the season and it may not have been a transaction for a story or it may not have been about confirming something at that point, but when it's time to go, you hope you've got enough runs on the board with that person that they're willing to at least give you some information on the back of months and months of conversations, knowing that they can trust you with certain things.
For sure. And we're looking to drop this podcast on the first day of the trade period. What is your sort of, you know, it's the busy time for you. What does it look like? Like, are you getting much sleep?
Well, the biggest thing when it comes to trade period, and I always say this, is the Perth time zone in Melbourne goes back 3 hours. So when it's 6 o'clock and 7 o'clock in Melbourne, and people have had enough of dealing with your phone calls all day, it's only 3 or 4 o'clock in Perth. So you still got another 3 or 4 hours at the end of the day to keep making calls. And I don't know, that's one of the big things I always chat to and have chatted to bosses with in the past and different colleagues is actually what's the latest point in the day you can make contact with someone. And it's always that, you know, is it 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock? Some people are different. So, you know, there'll be certain people I speak to that, you know, that you're not much luck getting them after 9 or 9:30. But if you were to text someone at 10:30, even up to 11 o'clock, especially at this time of the year, you're more likely or you're a good chance to get a response. So yeah, different things. And it all comes back to, you know, that the back of your brain, you've got someone's number, but you know how they might interact. You know that they might prefer a phone call. You know that they might prefer a text. So it all comes into it. But yeah, when it comes to the sleep, I won't lie. I do find myself at 3 or 4 a.m. waking up sometimes and thinking, "Have I checked that enough, or have I followed that up?" But yeah, it's only 3 or 4 weeks, and it's rewarded at the end of it with a nice break.
Yeah, I follow. I don't know if you know him. He's an Italian journalist for the soccer, Fabrizio You know him? Yeah. Fabrizio Romano. And he obviously covers all the European football stuff, which I'm pretty interested in. But he is nonstop. Like he must have, I'm sure he's got a team behind him, because he is just like on the last day of the the transfer period, he went live and he did like 14 hours straight of him just sitting there on his phone, and it had like 50 million views. It's just insane. Like there's so much interest around, you know, who's going where. And I suppose I want to ask you about that as well, is what's the consumer mindset behind that? And two, I suppose just like the absolute commitment that you need to be able to covering, you know, such a huge period.
Yeah. So getting back to the consumer mindset, I reckon it just gets back to people wanting to know something they didn't know when they woke up. So I did a show on 3AW for a year with Jared Healy and Dwayne Russell, and I had a slot every night at 6:35. And the brief from those two guys was, you've got to come on at 6:35 and tell the listeners something they didn't know before they got in their car. And that's all it is at the end of the day. And that's why Twitter is such a big platform now. Fabrizio is massive on Twitter and Instagram, is people just want to and crave information they didn't know an hour ago. And you talk about the commitment. Well, I'm very jealous of what he does, and do look up to him in a big way, because I'm dealing with 18 AFL clubs. He's dealing with, 30 Premier League 20 Premier League teams. Then you've got 20 teams in La Liga, Serie A, all over Europe. He's dealing with, he'd be probably dealing with close to 100 high-end clubs that have got the biggest fan bases, dealing with different managers and players and club boards and those sorts of things. It is massive from him, and you take little bits and pieces. I've still watched a lot of his YouTube clips, like those, you know, those little behind the scenes, and follow him in a day of. I try and watch heaps of those because, admire a lot of what he does, and even like Schefter in the NFL or Woj in the NBA. Following those blokes, it's massive.
But do you know what's funny? Like how as you said before, how quickly the news cycle moves. Like, you know, for example, like back onto the soccer subject, but you know, Ronaldo going back to Man United, huge news, like international coverage. 24, 48 hours later, it's completely gone. Like we're on to the next thing.
Oh, mate, and talk about Twitter and how quickly it moves. Like, the hardest thing now is so many people are on the same story, and it's always been that way, I'm sure, but with Twitter and Instagram and how quick this stuff goes, you got to go, because if you don't do that, then that point, a minute later, someone else might break it, and then you've lost all power or ownership on that story. And that's how quick and it goes right now. And there is no worse feeling, and every journal will probably tell you the same. If you know something and someone beats you to the story, it'll churn your guts for days.
How often do you get it wrong? Because you obviously have that pressure to move so quickly. Do you get it wrong? Like, how often do you get it wrong?
You do, and that's where you'll see, a lot of people putting riders on things they say. Like, you know, a player, until a deal is done, it's never done, right? So you'll see someone say he's set to, or he's weighing up, or he's considering, and all those things are true at the time. The other thing that I do laugh at is, there might be sometimes there's a story that you know is factual and you go with that story, and then it by going with it, it might actually change the player's mind or the club's mind on it, because other factors come into play. If it becomes public, then another suitor might get involved, or if it becomes public, then the club might know they need to up the offer by $50,000 a season to that player. So at the time of reporting, it might be right, but it might not ultimately prove to be right. And I think that's where journos need to be adaptive on the run, in that things can change so quick. Like, for example, earlier this year, the COVID situation was there was a massive day, I reckon, in July, August, when the Crows and Power were both in South Australia, and South Australia was just about to go into lockdown. And they were planning to fly to Melbourne. It got called on and off five times in the same day. Now, journos following that, and people were saying, oh, but you got it wrong an hour ago. Well, no, that was what it was at the time, and then the plane got cancelled, then they put it back on, then they're going to Queensland, then they got cancelled for that flight. So it all happened so quick, and that's the beauty of modern-day journalism. Rather than 20, 30 years ago, you would have the nightly news at 6 or the paper the next morning, and there was no Twitter and no stuff moving throughout the day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, is that similar to sort of the Lachie Neale situation where, you know, there was huge kind of talk about he's ready to go and then, you know, at the time of this podcast, he's come out and said, well, no, I'm staying. Do you think there's some sort of media element to that or sort of public feedback that impacts that decision?
I'm not sure how much the percentage, but I reckon there would have been some part to play in the media coverage of that story getting out before the timeline that Lachie Neale and Brisbane would have liked. So they finished their last game on the Saturday. That story got reported on the Sunday night. He was meant to meet with the club on Monday or Tuesday of that week. So I think that story got out a little bit ahead of plan and sort of, you know, props to the journo, Ryan Daniels, who went with that story. That was him doing his job. And Lachie Neale contemplating a move at the time was absolutely right. But the thing is, once that story comes out, people are then quick to try and confirm it or verify it. And at the time, he was weighing it up. And that's what the story was. When you might see other outlets try and, well, they might have been beaten on the original story. So they're going to try and outdo someone on the next. And that's where they can often fall into traps.
Makes sense. Now, what are you expecting in this trade period? I mean, specific or more broadly, I've spoken to some stakeholders, I'll call them, and the general sort of...
I was waiting for it, mate.
I'm not dropping any bombshells here, but I saw you lean in for that one. The general sort of consensus is that we may not see, you know, too many big moves this year. It's going to be more sort of, I don't know, what's the word, sort of needs basis or, you know, just trying to recover after, you know, the COVID scenario. Is that something that you kind of think or you got another opinion on that?
No, I think that's pretty close to being on the money. So last year, the salary caps all got slashed by 9% per club. And it might not sound like much, but that's basically a $100,000 deal becoming $90,000. So the money in the market and to try and attract and pull players out of their original teams just isn't there to what it was. And for example, Matt Crouch, Adelaide best and fairest and all Australian, he re-signed on a 2-year deal. I reckon the market a year or two earlier, had he been out of contract and a free agent, might have dictated a 4 or 5 year extension. So it just shows that the Crows didn't have to stump up as much money to keep him at the club. The other factor, though, going the other way is Adam Chera at Fremantle as an example. He's a Victorian, hasn't been able to get back to see his family and friends in Victoria pretty much for 2 years now with the COVID situation. Like Lachie Neale and weighing up with his pregnant partner, a move back to WA because of, you know, the COVID scenario, there might be a player or two bob up but we may not know about yet that has been thinking about that and just hasn't been able to see their family as much as they would have liked. So that's something to keep an eye on. And back to the salary cap scenario, a lot of players actually, when the clubs cut their caps and were forced to slash money, actually back-ended contracts. So they moved money that was due in 2021 into their deals in 2022. So clubs are more reliant on paying that money, and that's where a player might actually be forced to stay and accept their current deal at their club rather than try and explore the market elsewhere.
That's a good insight. And with the Chera scenario, do you think that's going to be a multi-club arrangement? Like, I personally, you know, I'm not in the scoop, but it's hard to see just two clubs involved in that.
Yeah, so we're speaking now early September. I could be completely wrong when this goes live, but it looks like Carlton is the most likely scenario because they've got that pick inside the top 10. And even though there's that threat of pushing a player who goes through the trade period unsigned and picking up in the preseason drafts like Jack Martin a couple of years ago, clubs just don't like doing it that much because they know that in 12 months' time they've got to deal with the player agent and the clubs again. So, yes, that scenario is there, but I think the most likely situation we're going to see is Adam Chera end up at Carlton. The other one I was keeping close eye on all year was Richmond, given they had multiple first-round picks, but it appears, judging by their commentary, they're going to head to the draft and trying to top up with 18, 19-year-olds. Whereas Carlton are in the window, although they've missed finals, their list build for several years is they've paid under the required salary cap, which allows you for 3 years beyond that to pay up to 105% of your salary cap. So last year we saw them go and get Zach Williams and Adam Sardis because they've been paying 95% of their salary cap for several years. They finally had the money banked and saved that all right, let's go and attract these players. We think we're in our window to try and bring in a flag. The young draft picks are all 21, 22, 23 now. It hasn't worked right now, but the Blues still do have a bit of cash to play with, and I think that's where we see the Chera one most likely falling.
Nice. And with the Richmond situation with the draft picks, they'd be pretty close, though, with their salary cap. Like, they wouldn't have a lot of room, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's much easier paying a draftee $100,000 up front than, you know, bring in someone on 700, 800 grand. The other perfect example a couple of years ago was Tim Kelly. So he was drafted to Geelong, two-year deal. Everyone who's drafted in the national draft gets a two-year deal. Now, his first year was off the charts for a first-year player, but the Cats held him to his contract for his second year, yes, because he was a star player, but also they were getting probably $700,000 or $800,000 worth of value out of a guy that was on about 140, 150 grand when it came to triggers. So these are the things that clubs weigh up when it comes to Dakota in the draft. Brisbane is another example. Their cap's really tight. They're paying, you know, McCluggage, Rayner, Berry, Hipwood, all these good young players. Their cap's tight and they've got two first round picks. They're saying they're going to go to the draft with those because it's much easier and better for their cap to pay those kids on the base draftee wage up front.
And who do you think's sort of got that, in your opinion, who's got the best list at the moment in terms of the next 5 years, in terms of good, young, established players who are going to, you know, I kind of think of Western Bulldogs 2016, which hasn't quite eventuated, but, you know, that really core young group, 22-year-olds really coming through. Who do you reckon has got that at the moment?
I reckon Sydney's got a really good list. They do need to find a young ruckman. They've got Tom Hickey, who's played out of his skin this year. He's well into his 30s, but they've been, no doubt they've been lucked out, I guess, with the academy. They've got a couple of kids, Nick Blakey through that system, Errol Goulden and Braden Campbell in the last 12 months. But they've got a great young core of kids. Catlin Mills is still only 24, 25. Dylan Stevens was a kid they picked up a couple of years ago, still at the time of recording. Unsure whether he's going to be there or not, but their cap is tight, but I think they've got some good young kids that will see them through. The other one is Fremantle. So, yes, they're going to lose Chera, but Sean Darcy is going to be an out-and-out star as a ruckman. He's only 23, 24. Brayshaw and Sarong in the midfield, they're only into their, what, fourth and third years going to next season. Might be fifth year for Brayshaw, so I reckon the Dockers and Swans, if I was looking to next year's market, I reckon they might be two teams that continue to rise.
Nice. And who do you reckon's going to make the biggest play next year? Potentially, not necessarily out of the top eight. Could be, I don't know, could be an Essendon type, but who do you think's making a big play?
For the flag?
For the flag, yeah.
Yeah, I reckon the Swans are pretty well primed. If they can get one good year out of Buddy again, he had a bit of an interrupted pre-season going into 21. If you can have a good run into 22, you'll crack the 1,000 goals. Freo, I reckon, will contend. St Kilda as well is an interesting one. So, good year last year. Fell off a cliff this year, but they've still got some good young players around that core. Rowan Marshall's 25. They get Gresham back from his injury. Max King is like, he's going to be a generational key forward and he's going to be better again. And I just like what they're doing with their defence as well. Dougal Howard, Callum Wilkie, Tom Highmore. Not the biggest names, but they're just piecing a few things together. So I don't think the Saints will be as disappointing as they were in 2021 as well.
And Ben King, is there much talk around him? Because he didn't make the... Well, he wasn't anywhere near it in terms of the Gold Coast BNF the other day. Has there been much talk around it? Because there was a lot.
There's going to be stacks. So he's contracted for the end of 2022 at Gold Coast. He'll stay for that season, but there's going to be one of the all-time bidding wars for this kid next year. And you can already expect clubs that are going to be trying to leave money in their salary cap to attract a player like him. And Essendon is crying out for a key forward to play alongside Peter Wright. I reckon they'll be having a look at Ben King. And just watch this trade period to see where the clubs get this year's picks and trade them into next year and try and bolster their hand for next season. Because if Ben King is on the market heading into the second half of next season, I reckon there's going to be 10 clubs in Victoria trying to get their hands on him. He kicks 40-odd goals this year. I was stunned he didn't make Gold Coast's top 10 of their BNF, but I think if he gets to the second half of next season without a contract at the Suns, he could be one of the biggest trade players we've seen in recent times.
But you think they're going to want some ready-to-go players on the other side, aren't they? Gold Coast?
Yeah, that's the issue, unfortunately, is they just haven't been able to retain these guys. Dion Prestia and Jager O'Meara, Tom Lynch, they're all playing at big Melbourne clubs now, and they were drafted to the Gold Coast. That's where it's so important for them to have a big 2022 season with Stewie Jew out of contract for next year. They've got guys like Matt Rowell, Noah Anderson, even Ben King as well, all coming out of contract in the next year or two. That's the core they're trying to build their club around. If they can convince them that it's the right place to be, then the others might follow. You actually remember a couple of years ago, Ben King was out of contract at the time, and the Suns paid him big money. I reckon he's 2021 year, so he's third year at AFL level. He was probably the highest paid third year player that I can remember, because they paid him overs to try and keep him and build a core around him, knowing that if they've got his signature, that they're more likely to keep other players. And it's a ploy that a number of clubs use. But, I think it's a big 12 months coming up for the Suns. Because if they don't get this right, then they're back to the drawing board, and they've done it four or five times. They've stripped it right back four or five times, and it continues to not work.
Mate, before we wrap up, I want to know what's the biggest story that you've broken, or one that's had, you know, the biggest kind of effect?
So I was 21. I get too much enjoyment out of this story, so bear with me. Bear with me a moment. I was working for the Footy Show under Damien Barrett. We got a tip that Dustin Martin, who was out of contract at the time at Richmond and was surveying his options. So this would have been 2012, 2013. He was going to meet with Greater Western Sydney. So I got on a flight from Melbourne to Sydney, and the idea was basically to try and find Dusty. Now, talk about needle in a haystack. It was an absolute nightmare. But the Giants were actually building their new facilities at the time in Homebush near the Olympic Stadium. So I thought, I've got to just try my luck. I'll park myself there for the day. Anyway, like an hour or two later, this big black van rolls in, and there's Dusty getting out with his player manager, and then Leon Cameron, the coach. Stephen Silvani was list manager at the time. Dave Matthews, the CEO, all rolled up within about 10 or 15 minutes. They're putting their hard hats on with their fluoro vests to go walk around this new Giants facility that was about half completed, but was going to be their new high-performance centre. And we had two cameramen that day, one based on the top of a car park, like the adjoining car park next door was like a shopping centre car park, and one on ground level. And the camo up on the shopping centre, I'm ringing him because he didn't know AFL. This is like Sydney. These are Sydney camos at the time. And I'm like, the guy with neck tats, we need some shots of him. And I remember watching the vision and seeing that vision get back was extraordinary. That was about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And I've caught a flight back to Melbourne at the time, holding the disc with dear life, because it was sort of, back in those days, it was too hard to transfer the vision quickly. So the best scenario was actually to bring the disc physically back to Melbourne and put it on the show that night. So it led the Footy Show that night. And anyway, he ended up staying at the Richmond. The rest is history, but he almost was a Giant.
Who was his manager at that time?
Ralph Carr. So the same manager that he's got now. And
Was, yeah.
Yeah, he's an entertainment manager by trade. He's picked up a few players since then, but I think Dusty was probably his only client at the time. Still have a chuckle with those guys these days. I don't know. It's just one of those moments, like seeing Dusty in a hard hat walking around Sydney and being able to present it on the Footy Show was pretty cool.
Well, mate, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing some really good insights, and good luck for the upcoming trade period. I know it's going to be pretty busy, and I look forward to your 14-hour live YouTube like Fabrizio Romano.
Nah, can't wait, mate. Thanks for having me on board, and all the best with the future of the pod.
Cheers, mate.